Welcome to Local Exposure, a podcast about music and the greater Cincinnati scene. I'm Jim Nolan. Thank you for listening. Sharon is Karen, the newest album from Tooth Lures a Fang, displays an acutely DIY approach to recording, which allows them to take full control of the process. The music and lyrics are the result of a tenuous balance between the absurdly funny and the uncomfortably dark. I sat down with Zach Starkey and Nick Pater to discuss the new album, the recording process, hating your high school, and the dark silliness that is Tooth Lures a Fang. Joining me today are Zach Starkey and Nick Pater from Tooth Lures a Fang. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Jim.
Yeah, thanks.
This new album called Sharon is Karen is your second full-length release and the first one that you're putting together with Lo-Fi City Recordings. What's it like working with Lo-Fi?
So we've known Sean Stout. He's kind of the mastermind person behind the label itself. About as long as we've been a band, it was either our very first show or our second show. We got double booked at the Comet and at his album release like 5 years ago. And we actually meshed quite well. So both bills happened, and then we were like, oh, we're pretty similar. So we've just been in contact with him for a long time, play some shows with his band, Sleepy Drums. But yeah, so just tertiary connection with him for a long time and kind of kindred spirits and our passion for music and kind of the DIY ethic.
Okay, full disclosure, I'm not currently wearing my Tooth Lures a Fang t-shirt, but I have one. And not only do I have one, but it actually glows in the dark, and it is awesome.
Have you checked that out?
Yes.
Okay, so it does actually glow.
Oh, absolutely.
Perfect.
Yeah, still does, even after, you know, so many washings.
That's good.
Now, the title of the album, Sharon is Karen, is a bit of a wordplay. You're kind of known for that. Your EP prior to that was called Two Floors of Hang.
Yep.
Yep, that's correct.
What's going on with all the wordplay and the implied comedy of the names?
It goes back to the band name, which is just one of those things that we kind of think that all band names are bad to a certain extent, and you just have to pick one that you know you're going to be able to live with. When we came up with Tooth Lures a Fang, I told somebody, and she was like, Two Floors of Hang? And that's just funny for that EP
it
name. It was like, great. I forget what other puns have come off of that. There's one that was French. It was like, Tu fleurs le rond. And I'm sorry to all French speakers. And I would love to do another EP that's just based on these puns. I think it's where Nick and my sense of humor really overlap is just wordplay. And we've taken it to a place where if it's really dumb, then it's really satisfying. Yeah. It's not funny because people laugh. It's funny because we said it. It's funny because we actually went to that pun.
I think you categorized it perfectly when you said implied comedy, which is a very deeply satisfying way to categorize it. Because I think for a lot of people who don't have our sense of humor, they don't think these jokes are that funny, which to me makes them all the better. But yeah, and the name definitely helps with like boring search engine optimization and just like retention of that band name. You're not going to forget it once you see it. It's long and cumbersome and goofy and means nothing. It's satisfying in all the right ways and it works.
How long have you two been playing together, either as Tooth Lures a Fang or in other projects?
Or as Zach Starkey and Guest?
Yeah, that was the first bill that we had, Zach Starkey and Guest.
That was a long time ago. That was more than 5 years ago. Because Tooth Lures a Fang proper first show out with a drummer was May of 2013. And I think that the show Zach Starkey and Guest was the fall of 2012. I think that was after Two Floors of Hang came out.
We recorded the first EP together. Zach enlisted me to engineer for him that album, and I ended up playing bass on it as well. And then, I mean, that was kind of just my introduction to the songs. And some of the songs from that EP are on the first full-length T-Fin. So we've been playing music together for longer than that, I guess.
Yeah.
Probably about 7 years,
mm-hmm.
roughly.
This album continues this. The best phrase I could come up with to describe it is this dark silliness.
kind of continues that theme, not only in the music, but in the lyrics and the cynicism of it all, the sort of, even though you think you're special, you're not all that special sort of mentality in a lot of these lyrics.
Yeah.
Tell me about that mindset when you're writing these songs.
Oh, well, the dark silliness, I think that the silliness is a lot in like the titles and the surface, and it's sort of a sheen on the darkness of some of the songs. I didn't realize how dark Sharon is Karen is until we put the songs in order and we're like listening to the album. And it was like, wow, this took a turn. Like there's energy there, but a lot of these songs are pretty dark. I don't know exactly where it all comes from. I think the lyrics are a lot mine, but Nick really contributes. I think he understands that sort of aesthetic with what we're going for. And like when he contributes to lyrics, it really fits in there very well. I'd like to say that it's kind of like, yeah, because life is good and life is bad, because that's how I feel. And on this one, it just happens to be that it's life is silly and life is also sometimes very trying.
I think it's also interesting that as you listen to the album, it does start to get even slower. Like the pace of the song slows down. They do get heavier as the album goes on. So by the time you're at the end, you are kind of in a dark place.
Well, yeah, that's good to hear. Not that was necessarily intentional. We had a very similar experience the first time we were listening to like the first round of final mixes when we actually listened to the album straight through, just in one sitting. There's a definite shift in tone and mood and seriousness, I guess, lyrically specifically, as the album progresses.
Yeah, and I think the cynicism, it's a weird kind of cynicism. I'd like to think of it as sort of endearing. And there is that you think you're special but you're not aspect to it. But I think like specifically in the first single in last year, it's like everybody hates their high school. It's not original. Honestly, the place that comes from is more of a, we need to move past that. Like, that's not an original thought to hate the air you breathe. And to focus on that aspect of, I breathe this air is bad. I think that that's like a harmful and not productive place to be. The way that we came at dealing with that thought was, well, that's not original. Everybody hates their high school.
The irony of writing relatively cynical songs about, there's not that big of a difference between someone hating their high school because they go there and us disagreeing with someone who hates their high school because they go there. So I think that that's kind of part of it. Like, there's the tongue-in-cheek nature with which we take our music and lyrics, I think, kind of matches the cynicism that we have, but we realize that cynicism is just as misguided as the thing about which we're being cynical.
Since we're talking about high school, I have a question that may or may not be maybe slightly offensive, but I'm curious. Listening to your music, seeing your photographs, seeing some of the videos you posted on, say, your Facebook page, your social media, you guys strike me that you might have been band geeks in high school.
I was president of the band in high school my senior year.
I was not a band geek. I was tech chief for like the technical theater department.
Those things are very similar.
Very similar. Yeah. And hyper geeky and nerdy. I continue to be a nerd, but
yeah. I was for sure in band. Unabashedly.
Just wear a saxophone at all
yeah.
times.
Yeah, well, I played the saxophone too. Yeah. So
I guess it's safe to say that your perception of your high school experience colors maybe a bit of this, looking back with this dark cynicism.
Yeah, I think more of it is like, I will be honest, I was a kid who was just like, yeah, this place, you know, like when I'm there. And I look back on that, and this is as a high school teacher now, in dealing with people who are a lot like I was, I look back and I think, you wasted your time. Like, you could have just been enjoying that. Like, you were a teenager, you had a lot of hobbies and a lot of friends, and just the anger that you felt about the place that you spent every day was a waste of time. I think that is more like, as an adult looking back, I guess that's like angry at myself. Like, well, you sure wasted a lot of time feeling that way.
And a lot of energy.
Right. Yeah. It takes a lot of energy to be that angry about something that you don't have any control over, and your anger won't affect even a little bit.
Well, let's continue on that theme for just a moment. I want to listen to a track off of the new album, Sharon is Karen. And the song I want to listen to first is called Your Kind of Guy, where I feel that you're, again, making fun of some stereotypes with this sort of pseudo-machismo character. But also, another thing about this song that I really love is the fuzz guitar tone. It is wicked. So I want to listen to Your Kind of Guy from Sharon is Karen by Tooth Lorzafang.
Thank you.
Now, I didn't make the fuzz pedal that I used on the recording, but I...
The one you have now is better.
Yeah, well, the one I have... I made the fuzz pedal that I'm currently using live, and it sounds real good.
Again, that electronic...
Yeah, right. I think it's... I think for me, that comes from my dad, because he's just like... learn how to do it and do it. He knows how to do so many things. Like when I started getting into soldering, he knew stuff. And I was like, how do you know this? Like, how do you know this stuff? And he taught industrial arts for years. So I think he picked it up a lot there. But I think it's more from him. It's just he knows all kinds of stuff and always encouraged me to do something, have a hobby that you can enjoy. And so that's my new hobby.
I think it also goes back to the idea of being self-sufficient. If you know how to do something, you don't have to pay someone else to do it.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is definitely part of not necessarily what drew us together, but what has kept us together, like, as friends in, like, in a band. We both focus on that kind of, like, very DIY, self-sufficient mindset, especially when it comes to music. I mean, like, everything we've put out, I've recorded, I've mixed and mastered. We've recorded in bedrooms and, like, non-sterile studio spaces and with very imperfect equipment and... I try to make do with what we have and make something that doesn't necessarily sound representative of a, like, quote unquote, like, low fidelity space. Try to put out something that sounds good and sounds as pristine as it can and represents the music in a transparent way. If we can do it, we will. Like, we hand print all of our t-shirts. Like, Zach hand makes the screens that we print our t-shirts with. And I think the only things we've enlisted outside involvement in has been... actually pressing CDs. We do that at QCA, so that's still local. And then working with, like, local photographers or graphic designers to do more, like, album art composition. But everything
else is
us. I'm
really glad that you brought that up. I was going to ask you about the production on the album and how it was recorded. So it was basically done in-home?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So in four spaces, we tracked drums in... Jordan Von Wadi plays drums on the album. We tracked drums in his basement, tracked guitars in a bedroom in Zach's house, tracked all of Zach's vocals in a bedroom at my parents' house, and then tracked most of my vocals and half of the bass at my apartment.
How do you pick which room to use? Is it space? Is it sound? Is it both?
The room that's there. I've been recording music for a long time, and I have no formal education, just been doing it since I was 7 years old with, like, a tape cassette player and recording things through a terrible microphone built into the stereo. As I acquired more technology and more equipment and got more into music, I started recording more. So I think I'm all right at it. The songs sound good. They don't sound terrible. So I think that's kind of number one.
They sound like we do, which is really great. I think that that's something that I've gone to see bands and I hear their album and you go to hear them and it's just, it's not the same. I think for us, the biggest thing for this album is that there's several guitar tracks because we wanted, like, a sort of bigger vision for that. And it really works on the album, but it sounds like we sound.
And that also helps combat kind of complacency and laziness with performing the same songs over and over again live, having more constraints put on you in a live setting than you have in the studio. It makes the songs feel a little bit more fresh, and we have to think about them more and think about when we're turning on or off a certain effects pedal or where we're coming in, or you might be combining two different guitar lines together and playing both of them in succession and trying to mimic in some way the sound of the album but still have it feel cohesive and natural live.
One of the things I personally love about a lot of lo-fi recordings or home recordings is the authenticity of that. It just feels, I guess, kind of what you were saying, that's what the band sounds like.
Yeah.
That's what they really are like. Did you ever reach a point when you were recording the album that you wanted to do something, but then you changed your mind and said, no, we really can't replicate that live, so we're going to leave that out, or we're not going to do it this way?
Not really. I think we had that mentality a little bit more for Tiefen, the first full length, because we track everything live together in a live room. Drums, bass, and guitar, at least, were live, and then we punched in for vocals. But for this album, it was... what can do the best job and be the most efficient at servicing the song? So we did a lot of composition in the studio, writing new guitar lines, especially in vocal harmonies, with less attention to how can we replicate this live. We'll figure that out later.
Yeah, none of the stuff that we added in the studio gets in the way of the song. And I think one of the difficult things about playing live is actually having people who have never heard your songs understand what they're about. And oftentimes too much stuff just gets in the way of like the lyrical content, which is important to us to have songs that mean something where the lyrics like have something to do with the feeling of the song. If anything, it'll be easier to preserve that meaning in a live setting.
So the album came out on June 9th. You had an album release party at Urban Artifact.
Yeah, it's a good time.
The two bands that you played with, Beloved Youth and Cooper.
That's mm-hmm. correct.
Beloved Youth is from Cincinnati. Is Cooper also local?
Yeah, they're from Cincinnati.
I think they say they're from Ohio. Like on their social media, it says a band from Ohio. But they're Cincinnati local, and we've played with them before as well. They're a great band to check out. So is Beloved Youth. If you haven't heard of those guys, all of them are good people, and the bands themselves are great as well.
What other shows do you have coming up soon?
We're playing at Motor on July 6th, and that's with Punch Drunk Tagalongs from Cleveland and Bright Kid from Chicago. That'll be the next show that we've got coming up, and give everybody a chance who couldn't make it to the release show a chance to come and see us. The other bands are really great. Punch Drunk Tagalongs is reminiscent of like Speedy Ortiz, and I know that PJ Harvey is an influence for several members of the band, but they're great live. We played with them at the Comet a couple months ago. And then Bright Kid, they've got that like really polished indie pop sound.
Yeah, and we're also playing Bewilderfest at Urban Artifact Music Festival. It's on August 24th and 25th. We're playing on 24th in the Taproom stage. Cults, Moon Hooch, Saint Seneca.
Founding Fathers.
Founding Fathers, Go-Go Buffalo. Host of other Cincinnati bands, Dog Yop, yeah. So that should be a really cool festival.
And then we were talking about Lo-Fi City before. We're going to be playing with Sleepy Drums at their album release show August 4th with Cincinnati band Slow Glows.
That's also at Urban Artifact.
You've developed a pretty strong relationship with Urban Artifact. You filmed your video there.
Yeah. So full disclosure, I do work there. So that has made getting things there easier. We loved Urban Artifact, and it was my favorite venue to play before I even worked there. I mean, as far as Cincinnati venues
for sure.
that we had played. We had played DeVita House with Devin Brooks and Andrew Tetrick, the two guys that ran that as a house venue in Clifton. It's the best-sounding venue I've ever played at, and it was a basement that was fully sound-treated. And they're amazing audio engineers, and then they moved to Urban, and they're now in charge of the kind of sound department and a lot of other things at Urban. So it was a natural switch to kind of make with them, and Urban sounds amazing now because of them.
One thing that I did not ask you yet is about the album cover, because it's beautifully creepy. Who created it?
Yeah, that is one of my friends, Matt Hoyne. He's a fantastic artist, and his career is in graphic design. His Instagram is Sadness Salon. He has some really cool stuff there that he calls cursed art.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a term for it.
And I think what was great about the album cover was we had this idea. We went through a lot of iterations of what the album cover would look like. And we kind of told him a couple things, and we gave him the songs. And he got back to us with this first draft that was like, all right, let's go this direction. The two faces is part of our original idea.
The first idea was like a shot straight on of a woman taking off a mask of another woman.
But like shot in pastel.
Yeah, yeah. It which is like similar color profile and something that's equally absurd. Just because we think there's a really satisfying color scheme and just a really funny picture.
This goes back to the sense of humor thing because the album title, Sharon is Karen, I don't remember what spawned that. But then you take something very silly and reinforce it with like just take that joke and keep doing it. That's
until it almost becomes serious.
Right, exactly. So like I think that joy of people looking at it and going, Sharon is – now which one's Sharon? I can't wait to field that question. Yeah. I think that's, again, like going back into like that sort of aesthetic. Like it started as a joke and we committed to it and here it is.
Well, Zach and Nick, I really want to thank you for coming by and telling me about the new album, Sharon is Karen. As we leave, I'd like you to pick a song from the album to play as we exit. What song would you like to pick? Would you like to play Last Year, which is sort of the single from the album?
Yeah, that's the first single from the album.
There's a line from that song, "Don't apologize for your old friends. It won't be long until you're looking just like them." Again, that dark sort of cynicism with a sense of humor and a twist. What's going on in this song?
I was standing outside of Everybody's Records for Record Store Day, and there were two young people in front of me, and I could tell that they were in high school. And I asked them where they went because I thought they might be students at my high school where I taught. And I asked them, and this kid sort of like rolls his eyes and goes, "I go to Loveland." Like he was apologizing to me for the fact that he went to this great high school. And so that immediately was, don't apologize. Everybody hates their high school. It's not original. Like that, like right then, that's what the lyric was. Don't apologize for your old friends. It's kind of like just having that interaction with like, oh, I'm sorry about these people. But it's, you were that before and maybe you will be again. That's life.
Well, this is Last Year, again from the album Sharon is Karen by Tooth, Lords of Fang.
Don't apologize for hanging out. It's all the same if you don't get around. Criticize beyond what eyes can see. Still such a bore inside the circles that you keep. 'Cause everybody hates their high school. It's not original. Cause everybody hates their high school. It's not original.
Sharon is Karen by Tooth, Lures a Fang is currently available to listen at SoundCloud or to purchase from Bandcamp at toothluresafang.bandcamp.com or at loficity.bandcamp.com. For links to more information about Tooth, Lures a Fang, including upcoming live shows, please visit wvxu.org/lx. Local Exposure is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio and 91.7 WVXU. Today's episode was recorded by Josh Elstro and produced by me, Jim Nolan. The theme music for this episode is by Scott Holmes and comes from the Free Music Archive. Find out more at freemusicarchive.com.
It's not original, 'cause everybody hates their high school. It's not.
Until next time.